Most High, I come to you giving you thanks and praise for keeping me in sound body and mind. I ask you to forgive me for all my indiscretions, all that I have done and all that I will do. I ask you to open me up, use me as your vessel, let my voice be yours. Speak your mission through me, allow the listeners to open up and receive it the way you intended. No holds barred. Use me.
I look at the news. Again, what was happening around 1994, so we have that history. And so you have these two sides who hate each other, Hutus and Tutsis, all along the Eastern Congo, who've been displaced because each has taken over the other. Mm-hmm. And I thought what happened, what I read was that the Congolese government in Kinshasa would not grant them citizenship. And that was one of the reasons they said, we're going to Kinshasa.
No, when they first started, they never said anything about going to Kinshasa because they were not granted citizenship. They said they were going there because they were Congolese. They were trying to free Congolese people from the dictatorship in Kinshasa.
That was
their claim. Their claim was that we're going there to free the Congolese people from the dictatorship because we want to bring in democracy.
Exactly.
They were fighting and killing Congolese people. They were killing and raping them. And as soon as the leader gets arrested, you pull out a Rwandan passport out of his pocket.
We need to take off Mobutu, but we can't just have Rwanda and his people come and take over the Congo. So we need to find someone that's going to be a cover-up.
Yeah.
That's when Kabila finally comes
Kabila
in the picture.
Picked him up in Tanzania where he was in there running his illegal businesses.
Now, he used to be...
The official story is, and again, following Rwandan genocide, the people, all these groups in the Eastern Congo, Tutsi-led forces recognize, I guess, their power and they can keep moving and try to liberate government in Kinshasa. So they start moving south towards Kinshasa. Well, I guess you need somebody of Congolese heritage to kind of make it a legitimate army.
Yes.
So they found Kabila, the first.
Yes.
The first Kabila.
Mm-hmm.
And he rises up and becomes one of the leaders of this force that's moving towards. And from what we've discussed, do you think they were doing the will of the people? Because the people wanted to get rid of Sese Seko, correct?
Look, but what? People wanted to get rid of Sese Seko.
I don't think the people wanted the government that eventually came into place, but they wanted
to
get... So if somebody says, look, man, we just did something for Rwanda, we're over here, we just won this, we're coming.
Yeah.
I think people more apt to, we're coming to get rid of the devil.
Yeah.
People go, let's get rid of the devil.
Yeah, but because people had gotten to the point where it was like, you know, anything, anything is better than this. They say, give us anything, pretty much. So. And at the time, Sese Seko was already on the state of decline because his health has deteriorated so much, he was ready to hand out power.
And then we're at time-wise around 1996.
Sese Seko was on the brink of pretty much handing out power. But the thing is that he had built so much on people's mind that he was a god that nobody believed that you could die. Nobody believed.
Exactly.
Seriously. I didn't tell you this story about how I used to worship Mobutu every morning before he went to class.
That's the best way I know.
No, seriously.
So I was pledged allegiance to Mobutu?
Yes!
Do you remember it?
Yes, I was one of the kids who used to stand up in front of the flag because we stand up in front of the flag.
Je
fidélité au président fondateur du mouvement populaire de la révolution. So it means like I pledge allegiance to the founder of the mouvement populaire who was Mobutu's political party.
Right.
So we have to pledge allegiance to him and to the flag. When I was in Kinshasa, in the capital city, I used to be one of those kids. I was always courageous. I was outgoing.
Always courageous.
Always courageous.
He doesn't go for a 50-50 tackle. And this is how you're at, you said about 16 at this point.
No,
you're a teenager.
Before my early teens. So we're in school, so we have to stand, we have to dance in the name of Mobutu. We have to stand there, we have to sing songs of praise to Mobutu. Mobutu mama yemo kashamwa bantamwe. So we were singing that Mobutu, the son of Mama Yemo, which is mother, he is a leopard, a brother of the lion. We thank God for giving us a leader such as you. And when we were singing these songs, you had to sing and you had to dance.
Exactly.
If you don't sing, you don't dance. When you get in the classroom, the first time to get a whooping is you. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you did not sing the songs of praise and glory to Mobutu.
Exactly.
Right, they used to joke that in the Kremlin, when the leader came to speak, the clapping and the standing ovations would go on
until
15 minutes because nobody wanted to be the first one to stop.
Yes!
Nobody wanted to be the first one to stop.
I've seen Mobutu physically, and the man commands. He commands respect. I mean, you watch
it. He's instilled fear.
Yes, he did. But that's what I'm saying. It's something that was built in people's psyche. So in people's psyche, was like, you know what? This guy will never leave power. And the name that he gave himself forever and ever. So he was, to us, we were never going to have another leader. But, you know, during the early 90s, you know, when we start talking about democracy, when he said, you know, he's going to allow the political parties to start, you know, operating within the country. And some of us, I mean, I was 10 years old at the time in the 1990 when he made that speech, when he said that component on emotion, when he cried.
What does that mean?
It means understanding my emotion when he had to, because he came to the point where he had to share power.
Okay.
So that was, you know, he was going to allow political parties to start, you know, operating.
Well, there was, for 30 years, there was a one party system and there were elections. There were elections, but only one party. So it came a point where the world said, man, enough is enough.
Yeah, and at that point, personally, I remember I was 10 years old, but I became politically aware. I became aware of the political aspect of the country. So I started listening to the radio. Even the elections in the U.S., Bill Clinton's elections, was it, what, 1991, 1992?
92.
I listened to the whole election on the radio. I was 12 years old. I sat there, listened to the whole election, and I was going for Bill Clinton. I was rooting for Bill Clinton because, for some reason, my father being that he was working for the Americans, I was always connected. So I became politically aware. But again, Mobutu did a number on the Congolese, well, the Zairean, as we were called at the time. You see this right here?
He's pointing to a mark right on his left forearm.
You see this right here? And then you see this right here? You see this right here? So these are the vaccinations that we got during the Mobutu. Like, and like right now, if you want to identify some of the Congolese, you want to separate them from the running, we go to the, well, some of you only got one.
No, what were the vaccines for? What were the vaccines?
We don't know. I still don't know. Now, some people, it appears bigger. To some people, it doesn't appear at all. And to some of us, you know, it stays marked like this right here, and then this right here. If you look at most of us, we got this right here. Trust me, I don't know what it was. But anyway, but there were, on top of this, there were other things instilled in our minds, you know, to believe that he was God. But even as Mobutu was on the state of decline, he was trying to pretty much hand out power to quote-unquote a position at the time. These guys pretty much were like, nah, man, stay in power. Run forever. You are Seseseko. You will be, you'll get better. You ignore what was happening. And the people working, they knew that, you know, they had a window. Mm-hmm. Because they knew if Mobutu had died, their plan was going to maybe not fail completely, but was going to be delayed by a longer time. Because if a true Congolese had gotten to power, that Congolese was going to react definitely, especially if it's the one that we think about for Tshisekedi, he was definitely going to react to the situation in the Eastern Congo. So Mobutu, again, health deteriorating. He did not consider what was happening as serious. He was like, the usual is business as usual.
Right.
And he thought it was going to be normal. But again, the Congolese did not seize the opportunity to take power from Mobutu as his health was deteriorating. Because he could not commend anything as he was sick in the hospital somewhere in France. But people still believe, which means we're still praying for the marshal. So we pray for him to recover so that he can
try. What I'm hearing from you, and I want to see if you also echo the sentiment, that, I mean, obviously everybody's happy Mobutu was ousted or Mobutu was run out when those armies that were sort of festering in the Eastern Congo started riding towards Kinshasa. Mm-hmm. But what I'm hearing is that it's almost as if that ruling party was not Congolese. Those people that came to power were really not Congolese.
No, they were not.
Only
the Rwandans.
So is there a festering anger?
No, for Rwandans, I will not generalize, because we've had Rwandans who have joined our movement.
Okay.
There are Tutsis who know that Kagame is leading them into a bad situation, because they say Congo is a sleeping giant. But when Congo wakes up, because right now our eyes are opening, because he's here, he can advocate to this. We're learning more now than ever before, because of the whole thing. Because like you said, we have to go to the past to understand how we got here. Mm-hmm. We had to do that. We had to do that for our own sake, for the sake of our people, for the sake of our country. Like, how did we get here? Like, why not even the nationality of the man in power is questionable? Because as we know now, that he is not even a biological son of Kabila one. He is an adopted son. And in Congo, last I checked, we did not have a monarchy. When the king dies, the prince takes power now. So now we start questioning even the interests of those who went to the Sun City Summit, who chose him to be the president of the Congo. So we started looking at all these names and all these people, understanding what their origins are. Where did these people come from, and why did they make such a decision? And we come to an understanding now that it was a master plan. Because now all the Congolese generals who stood up to fight against Rwanda, all of them are dead. All the Congolese soldiers who tried to stand up, who actually had an impact on the war on the Eastern Front, all of them are dead. All of them died mysterious deaths. either by poison, or they got assassinated by their bodyguard or a Rwandan soldier who came, ambushed them and ran away.
Mobutu Sese Seko.
After the 1997.
And that liberation army, if you would, is led by
Kabila.
It's led by Kabila with Tutsi and Hutu forces from the Eastern Congo. They come in, they take power, and Laurent Kabila the First becomes
president
from 1997
to 2001 when he got assassinated.
And one when he got assassinated by the same people who brought him into power, because
yes.
He did not live up to what they expected from him. 2001, he dies. He's got a son.
Quote unquote son, Joseph Kabila.
8 days after his death, becomes the new leader of the Congo. With what sort of political experience?
None.
No. Except they just trained militarily in China.
They did not, for 2 months.
Okay.
No, seriously.
So you can't really leave the country in 2 months?
You should look where our GDP is in the Congo, you look where we're ranking everything in the Congo. You don't understand
there's something called the Human Development Index. I think it takes into account life expectancy, education, and income. And out of 187 countries, Congo is 186.
Thank you.
That's what 2 months of leadership training is trying to get you. That's what 2 months of leadership training is trying to get you. Peter, you were not there.
I was there.
When the second Kabila.
I left right when the first Kabila came in. We left the month after that. We left Kinshasa. We took a plane from Kinshasa, from Jili, landed in New York the next day.
And you were still there.
He was still there.
But again, you mentioned that because of how you lived and family's situation, that you were sort of shielded from life.
Yeah, and the funny thing was, the reason why we heard a lot of bullets, because I live probably 5 minutes away from the presidential palace.
The presidential palace?
Yeah, presidential palace. 5 minutes away from that. So it was very interesting when we finally heard that Mobutu was no more. And that
was there celebration at the school? People said to keep it quiet. It was like a golf clap.
No, everywhere.
Celebration?
Everywhere.
Out in the street, rejoicing.
Yeah, people chanting, dancing. Finally. I went to a Belgian school, a private school. So I didn't even get to really learn Congolese history.
Okay.
All I knew was I knew more about Europe.
So what did they teach you about King Leopold at the Belgian school?
He's revered. He's the one who took indigenous Congolese and made them and brought them civilization.
So no pictures about the whippings, the cutting off.
No.
Especially not in a Belgian school.
No, definitely not.
The funny thing is I've learned more about Congolese history here than we did
back home.
About 2 years ago. And so that's doing my own research. Now this is what you have to understand. The United States has always what they call our man.
Mm.
Our man was the name for the person who will give them access to the whole world.
So in Congo that's Sese Seko.
Yes. And when, because Mobutu was he was a mastermind. He can wake up one day and pledge his allegiance to the French.
Yep. And then
he wakes up the other day and plays more allegiance to the Americans.
But there's a reason for that. I mean, there's a reason why the United States supported Mobutu Sese Seko. And again, just a little historical lesson for people who might not be aware. Obviously, the middle of the 20th century, after World War II, is the beginning of the Cold War. So you basically have the world divided in two sides. You have those who are backing the USSR, communism, and those that are backing democracy in the US. And any independence movement that was beginning in Africa following the death of colonialism basically had to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going towards democracy towards the US or are you going towards the USSR?
No.
If you think about it this way, I want to start not a war, but a freedom fight for whatever cause I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
What do I need? You said it yourself, there are no guns in Africa. You only have the resources to make the bullets. The bullets come from the West. The guns come from the West, more or less, or China, okay?
Yeah.
I need guns to make my point. I need guns to win.
Yeah.
And I got two warehouses.
Yep. One in Washington, D.C.,
and one in Moscow.
Moscow. Yep. So what do I do as a just a smart leader? Not a corrupt leader, but just as I play one against the other.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. They play one government against the other. So if Nixon or Kennedy or Ford or Carter says, look, we're going to give you $20 million. Look, Mr. Carter, by the way, I visited Moscow 2 days ago. It was fantastic. When are you going to invite me to Washington, D.C.?
Awesome.
You know what I mean? If Carter says, I'm going to give you $20 million, you say, well, the guy in the Kremlin promised me $30 million. Yeah. And so you pit one against the other. So all the regimes, all the upcoming regimes following colonialism, I wouldn't say they had to, but it was good political strategy to say one day I'm leaning towards the USSR, the next day I'm leaning towards the US, because then you would get more resources.
But it was dangerous at the same
time.
It's
very dangerous.
And that's why during that time back to the Congo,
yeah,
that's when the US decides now to get rid of Mobutu. That, okay, we've had enough of him.
And this is, again, we're at late 1990s, early 2000s.
Yeah. We need to find our men.
And this is Bill Clinton. This is Bill Clinton.
That's Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Okay. We need Bill to find Clinton. A new our men.
For some reason, started to go to Africa a lot. Wow, is that interesting? You and you and me, after talking for 1 hour, we understand it comes down to money and it comes down to resources.
Exactly.
It comes down to putting the right people in place so that the power chess game that happens all over the world favors you in the end.
Yes.
That literally your queen wins.
Yes.
Your queen stays up there
and
wins the game.
I say, Africa must wake up, the sleeping sons of Jacob, for what tomorrow may bring, may a better day come. Yesterday we were kings, can you tell me, young ones, who are we today? Yeah, now. Well, Africa must wake up, the sleeping sons of Jacob, for what tomorrow may bring.
He's going back and looking at, there's a wonderful movie. Well, I mean, there's Hotel Rwanda, the movie.
And it's
you
not
can go back and look. Yeah. There's an even better movie, I thought. Actually, the first time I saw the guy, Idris Elba, was a movie called Sometimes
in April.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's a more personal story.
Yes.
It's a more personal story. I think it's a whole lot better than Hotel Rwanda. I mean, my heart goes out to the Tutsis. My heart, I mean, 800,000 people.
Of course, your heart will go for the Tutsis because that's what you have to do because you're a human being.
Right.
My heart goes there too. But of course, me, I always want to get to the source of it because I've never believed in the account that Africans are just killers of each other.
Right. Yeah.
There's always an instigator. There's always something happening. And that's what I call special interest. I always say you have the American people and the American special interest.
Mm-hmm.
The American people
good people.
My neighbor, who doesn't know anything that's going on out there. And then you have the special interest, which is probably just a handful of people who are just doing all type of dirty things around the world, which their own people don't even know. So I like to make this difference so that my audience is not really shocked or doesn't shut down when I talk. Because you don't approve of what's going on in the Congo. Nobody does. Nobody with a right conscience does. Except someone who has a high special interest in that region and would like to go things to go his way. And sometimes they are so far gone in the game that they can't come back. The only way is keep going. It's a one way. And then you have life still being lost.
And work it out. Mother Nature feeds all in farming and drought. Tell those selfish in ways not to share us.
And hopefully what we've been saying in terms of the history is making sense. How we end up with me looking at a Vine video of 10 seconds of what looked like old people in the 50s and 60s running through an alley with smoke and obviously bullets or something going on behind them, crying, what's going on, and I'm seeing your country's flag right there, and I'm seeing you putting up a dead body of your brother's good friend, and I'm seeing the back of what looked like a big, strong, muscular man, but his
cut off with machetes.
His not his skin, his muscles have been cut up like he's
with
a slab of freaking beef hanging. I mean, so we're now to the point where we have to talk about what is going on there now. And I think, obviously, all stuff has been going on, but it came to the attention of the world, I guess,
not the attention of the world, but stuff started popping off again on the 19th of January, where the reports is that students, it's been a student-led movement, students of the university. So like the same thing with the movement, it's an intellectual change that needs to happen, where people are going, Kabila II, you gotta go, bro.
Yeah.
And the reason he has to go is, I think the Constitution says only 2 terms, correct?
Yes.
And he wants a third. People are saying no, the world is saying no, it looks like. But his delay tactic is that he wants to organize a census.
Yes.
Exactly. An account of the Congolese people, which from my understanding, it's never really happened because there's not that infrastructure to do it.
Yeah.
So if you try to do it now, it's going to take another 3, 4, 5 years. So he's going to stay in power another 3, 4, 5 years while this census is going on.
Yes.
So people are seeing through that smokescreen as he just want to stay in power, just like your father, just like Sese Seko for 30 years, and we ain't going through that ish anymore.
Yeah.
So what is happening right now in the Congo?
One of them that was to amend the constitution. That's another way, you know, to amend the constitution, you know, to allow him to do that, to allow the government in place to do that.
So he wants to add a third term?
Pretty much. That was the long term goal.
Because the first time around, he amended it to change the age of the leader.
Yeah,
the lord, because he came into power when he was 30.
29.
He was at that time the youngest.
Head of state
in the world.
Yeah.
And so here's a person who had 2 months of political training to become the leader of a country, and he did it at 29. I was still going out at night drinking at that point. What did I know about running the country?
Was when we were going to Chicago, going to Miami, playing soccer tournaments.
We were ready to lead a damn country at 29. And I had my son. My son was 2 years old at the time, and I was trying to survive as a father. to leave a country that big with no infrastructure, with no history of democratized leadership, where there's, you can look back in this time and say, you know, those are the good old days. In his lifetime, there hasn't been the good old days. So what is his example? You're just going to match what Sese Seko did, you're going to match what your father, because that's all you know.
This guy had no training of any kind of training. But the thing is this, you know, he's got his two spiritual fathers. He's as Paul Kagame, and he has Yoweri Museveni in Uganda. Mm-hmm. They are the people running the Congo. He doesn't run the Congo. He does not have to run the Congo. He doesn't make any speeches unless it's like the New Year's Day. He has to make a speech, you know, Happy New Year, Congolese. I'm still here, effing you in the hind parts. So those are the kind of speeches. He does not speak to the people.
And coming to power, his French was very questionable.
Yeah, what? he never speak before, because the thing is that, you know, everything that he says, it's handed to him.
Exactly.
He doesn't have to do research, he doesn't have to do anything. He say, hey.
So we have another George Bush II. with Dick Cheney running a thing.
This guy never even made it to school, because they brought us his history as far as his autobiography, whatever. So everything we check of wherever they say he went to school, no records indicate that he never attended those schools. Anyone that they say he went for training, nothing indicates that he went there for so this guy appeared out of nowhere, and the result is what we are living right now. We've come to understand that in the past few years that he's a puppet. He's like a cartoon character, pretty much. They drew him, they put him there, and now all of us are just watching him on the screen, as you know, as they're moving him around. So where he's got everyone to move him, that's where he will go. Yeah. Because every time you got things like this happening in a country, the president will at least come out and say a word. All the murders, all the crimes, all the rapes, he never mentions them, he never speaks of them. Right. Let's take the French. The French just recently, they mobilized the whole country for 12 people. We have more than 12 million dead. 12 million, let's say they are innocent people. He doesn't know them, he doesn't care about it, because he participated in some of the massacres of those 12 million himself as a soldier. But let's speak about his own father, who got assassinated. He does not even want to answer any question about his father's assassination. My father died a few years back. When my father died, he was in Bethesda, Maryland at NIH campus. I went to talk to the EMS people who responded when they called the ambulance. I went to talk to anyone who was involved. I went to the hospital to talk to the doctor. What happened to my father? He was never sick. I wanted to know what happened to my father. But this man's father, quote-unquote father, was assassinated. And we've got hundreds of innocent people
in jail
right now. They've been arrested since 2001. They're still in jail to this day. They've been put in jail, but they've never been brought to be judged or to be prosecuted. Nothing. They're still sitting in jail up to this day. And every time he's questioned about the assassination of his quote-unquote father, oh, I don't want to discuss that subject. You don't. Your father got killed.
By his own bodyguard.
That's why they're telling us. That's why they're telling us.
Even the son had something to do with it?
He was the head of security. He was his father's head of security.
Head of security, yeah.
But he was not there. He was in Katanga. What was he doing there?
There is an account that the letter that was delivered by a U.S. Military.
From the American embassy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the letter handing, giving the okay to assassinate Laurent Kabila. Because he really spoke against the U.S. involvement in,
yes,
you know, trying to, yeah, completely control the Congo.
Madeleine Albright.
But it's just because he was a little bit out of control. Laurent Kabila, we have to admit that
he was a revolutionary.
But
he was not a politician.
He was naive. He was very naive.
He was not a politician. He was, yeah, a revolutionary.
He was not the U.S.'s man. What's the word? What's the phrase? Man, our man.
Our man.
He was not their man.
Kabila was a revolutionary. Even as, you know, you left Congo, you wanted to live in Tanzania because of the fear of being killed by Mobutu and all that good stuff. He was still a revolutionary because Kabila came out. He was one of the young men from Katanga, mm-hmm, the province which backed Lumumba.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually revolted against him, whatever. But, you know, he was one of those, we call him the Lumumbist. He was one of them.
Yeah, so the idea
was what Lumumba movement. But pretty much, I consider myself a Lumumbist. As fun as it may sound, I've seen Lumumba in a dream about 3 or 4 times discussing Congo's event.
Okay.
I've seen in dreams. So, I mean, again, I know it's weird, but
how much of the Lumumba ideology is still alive? I mean, for example, we just saw in the United States, the movie Selma came out reminding people of that ideology and the actions of Dr. Martin Luther King. So now people are kind of being reminded of King, reminding people that there's still the need for action.
Mm-hmm.
So Lumumba dies in 1961. We're at 2014. That's about 55 years later,
yeah,
which is around, I mean, King dies 68. So contemporaries, more or less.
Yeah.
How much of that Lumumbaist ideology is still alive today?
That's very questionable because, number one, is if you really carry that, you won't make it far. You won't make it.
You
far.
Will die.
You'll die.
Yeah. You bring up the name Lumumba in any political circle, it's a cause for concern by the government.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk about it.
You can talk about it
to be a hypocrite.
Yes.
And come out there and say, yeah, I'm a Lumumbist. You know,
yeah,
we all gonna clap for,
yeah,
you, but you don't actually apply
it. You can't live up to that.
And just to show you the lack of respect that this government had for Lumumba, they were supposed to review the constitutional law on January 19th, which was a Monday.
Yeah.
But because that's when this year?
Yes.
So that's when they started.
But because they knew that the people were going to rise up and refrain them from doing that, the parliament called people on January 17th,
which was
the day that Lumumba was assassinated,
yeah,
which is supposed to be
a holiday.
It's, yes, kind of disrespectful.
It's very disrespectful.
That's like spitting in our face.
Right.
Because whether they like it or not, Lumumba still lives in all of us.
Right.
Because the thing is this, what Lumumba believed in is what we believed in. Because, you know, we have a movement called the Movement of the Combatant.
And what does that mean, the Movement of the Combatant?
It's a freedom fighter.
Okay.
Freedom fighter. The idea is that, listen, I'm Congolese. Congo is my country, it's my homeland, and I'll fight for it. And I'll defend it. And Congo has to be free. Our freedom and the history of our country doesn't have to be written in Washington, D.C., in Paris, or anywhere else. The history of our country, our people, has to be written in the Congo by the Congolese. And those ideas are not welcome.
My ideology is pretty much simple. Congolese first. That what was Lumumba was about. That's what it was about. Whichever happens in the Congo, the Congolese first. They have to be the primary beneficiary of what the land has to offer. And that message is not welcomed by Western special interests.
No.
Is not welcome.
Because if that happens, then you see, you talked about Saudi Arabia earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see how much respect Saudi Arabia has? That's why the embassy of Saudi Arabia is the most secure embassy in the whole, go to Washington, D.C.
Right.
No other embassy is as much secure as the embassy of Saudi Arabia. If Congo lives up to what Congo is and what Congo can be, we will have more respect than them. You know what the embassy of Congo is? It's smaller than this room right here. Because during the 2011 elections, when Kabila tricked us again, stole the election, Congolese, all around the world started vandalizing Congolese embassies. In France, they walk into the embassy, took down his pictures, rip them off, broke into. In Switzerland, the Congolese did the same thing. In a lot of countries in Europe, the Congolese went to the Congolese embassy and did, we were trying to destroy the Congolese embassy, we couldn't find it.
Come to find out.
I went to this.
Yeah.
We come to find out it's like on the third floor of this apartment complex or this government building. So you can
even not even, when I picture DC, I picture like a row of streets where all the embassies are in there.
No.
So y'all are in the ghetto somewhere. Like, not in the
somewhere where you gotta wear get a bulletproof vest before you go out there. and that's how embarrassing it is for Congo. Because if Congo is, and I'm saying this, and I know the whole world is out there listening to me. If the Congolese people, if my people, if we can respect ourselves and really stand up to that idea, that Lumumba ideology of we are Congo and we will take care of Congo before everyone else.
Elle marque une heure décisive dans les destinées, non seulement du Congo lui-même, mais je n'hésite pas à l'affirmer, de l'Afrique tout entière. Nous que ceci, à leur tour, fasse connaître à leurs fils et à leurs petits-fils l'histoire glorieuse de notre lutte pour la liberté.
Whoever have control of the Congo have control of Africa.
Yeah.
And whomever have control of Africa have control of the world.
In terms of Africa now, in terms of resources.
And look what's going on right now. Who is controlling the Congo? Who has full say on what happens in the Congo?
So it's Kabila II backed by the U.S.?
Oh, yeah. If it was not the case, he was not going to be there.
Okay. Let me just give you an example. John Kerry comes to the Congo last year.
Mm-hmm.
He comes and tells Kabila, you have to respect the Constitution.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks after Kabila comes here in the United States,
yeah.
John Kerry
stands up and
claps for him, yeah. saying that
he's praising him for all these great things he's done.
And democracy.
You're looking over there what's happening in the Congo. You see how much he's doing? What, 166 out of 167?
He's 186 out of 187.
That's why John Kerry is praising.
He's praising Kabila for upholding democracy in the country. And this is conflictual messages.
He needs to go down the street at the Carter Institute. They'll give him the results of the true results of the elections in 2011. You'll go to the Catholic Church. They're Catholics. They're neutral. They'll tell you what the real results are, because they had three different commissions to oversee the elections. Two published one result and one published a different result. And one, at this time, beat two. So one...
And despite the fact that the election was tricked, a few months after, the United States
recognized him as the head, that's the president of Congo.
I think you mentioned something earlier about the spirit of Lumumba. Lumumba was about Congolese first. And I just wanted to throw something out to you. And again, this is all speculation, because I'm going to say, had he lived. When Malcolm X first came on the scene, he was pro-black. As he got a little bit older, mm-hmm. as he traveled the world, he became more open to inclusion from other people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the focus is still on uplifting the black community. In the same parallel, the focus would be on the betterment of the Congo. That's Lumumba's idea. Malcolm X goes from black people only to I see the world is a bigger place. In 2014, the world is an even bigger place. It's an even bigger place, more interconnected than ever. Do you think, had he lived, would he have gone the Malcolm X route and been more sort of open to other ideas? Or I understand Congolese first, and Congolese, but again, it's a big world, man. Nobody can stay there. Besides North Korea, there are no hermit countries where it's just us.
Yeah.
Everybody's open, you know what I mean?
Congolese first, it simply means that we have to be the first to rip from the benefits.
So is it an economic of idea? Or
everything.
Okay.
I mean, it covers every spectrum.
Yeah.
It only makes sense that if this is my land, you're welcome
yeah.
to come in my land.
Yeah.
And let me just tell you, this by nature, the Congolese people, we are very, very welcoming people.
Yes.
This is why sometimes we're being stumped.
Yes.
We are very welcoming people. But we cannot be tricked or put aside when it comes to reaping for the benefit of our own land.
Yeah.
That's all it means. And really, I've had the opportunity to read 5 books about Lumumba already. To answer your question, I don't think it would have went that route.
Okay.
Because, first of all, he understood one thing. For the Congo to prosper an economy, it had to work together with the United States. Lumumba said it. He said it.
That's another thing I was going
to
touch.
Lumumba wanted to build relationship with the United States. But when he comes here in the United States, he's being called a demon and a communist, and
they've tried to dehumanize Lumumba. Because the thing about it is this, it's just like slavery. It's just like white men did not want a black man to be equal to him.
Right.
They talk about all the civil rights, about how everybody's supposed to be equal and all that good stuff. But at the same time, somebody always wants to dominate over you. The whole idea behind Congo Free does not mean that, oh, we want to be on the top and then to stomp on other people. No, it did not mean that, or we have to hate other people. No, the thing is that he grew up watching the treatment from the Belgian of the whites were treating the blacks.
Right.
He said, I'm not going to accept for somebody who's coming from outside, come and welcome this in my own land. The whole thing about Lumumba was never about hating people or about being on top of people.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about being equal, that the whole idea of all men are created equal, mm-hmm. that we are equal, that we can sit on the table and talk and speak man to man instead of you talking me down like a child.
Right.
And he said that on his independence speech.
Yes.
Belgium, in which we consider to our equal.
We equal. And at that time, you don't want, white men did not want an African, an indigenous African, to tell that he was his equal.
We are 55 years or so after civil rights in America, liberation movements in Africa. And as African people, you guys are, and as black folks here, how sad is it that we're still going through this same freaking fight 50 years later? Here,
yeah.
We're still talking about, hands up, I'm a human being, don't shoot me.
Yeah.
And there, we've seen ideologues, liberationist leaders,
mm-hmm.
people who start off with good intentions, just turn the African people over
mm-hmm.
and just start just ramming it into them for 50 years. So what's the answer? What's the answer?
I always ask the question, why? Why does that happen? And how does that happen? How do they get all this power to be over the people? That's a very important question. Who instigates? Who is behind the curtains? They do have their share of blame, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's about cause and effect. For the Congo or Africa as a whole, we are so focused on trying to resolve or trying to fix the symptoms.
Yeah.
We have to go to the source.
Yeah.
It's the symptoms that we want to kill out. That's why the problems keeps on coming back
yeah.
in different phases.
One thing that I personally go back to is that people, first of all, people have to educate themselves.
Absolutely.
And I'm not speaking about going to the classroom sitting down to listen to a professor run his mouth, because the professor has his own opinion. And I tell this to all those around me, no. I tell them, when you get what you get from school, I'm not telling you not to ignore what you've been told in school, because
mm-hmm.
there are some facts to it. But when you get that, go back outside, go do your homework. The best education. And I'll tell you this much, I've learned more out of school than I've learned in
Absolutely.
School.
Absolutely.
Because I've gone beyond the classroom. For every person and to all the people listening to me, all those who know me, I got my family is a very diverse family. I can't even speak on my family because we got everything in my family. I don't know what some of my relatives think, but that's just how we are. We have Asians, we have Europeans, we have Americans, we have white, black, Hispanic, we got everything in my family. So I don't have any room in my heart against anybody for anything that has been done, because I know it's not that one person who did it. But evil has been done somewhere. Like Yedidi said, we just need to go back to the source. Find out who's behind the curtain. Because sometimes what we see, like Kabila, I told you, is a cartoon character. But who's making the picture move around? We need to know that. And that's the dangerous place where most Africans, like you said, those with the Lumumba ideologies, every time they try to go that far, you find their body somewhere in behind the car or inside the car, you find them dead or burned somewhere. So, we need to educate ourselves as people. We need to go beyond what we've been told. We need to go beyond television. We need to go beyond internet. We need to go beyond radio and television. We need to go beyond that, trying to find out where are these things coming from. Because what it happened is just like the Lumumba assassination. They waited 50 some years to finally come out and say that, you know what, we're sorry, my bad, I did it.
Oh, by the way, we only take the moral responsibility.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Because I heard Nas saying in one of his albums that, oh, just like Patrice Lumumba who got killed by his own people. I was like, what? I'm like, play that again? And I don't blame Nas, not at all. And it's what he's been told. Mm-hmm. But he had to go beyond what he's been told, because now it's making him look not too good, because the Belgian government has clear responsibility and so did the American government for the assassination of Lumumba. So now we know that Lumumba was not killed by his own people. We know that Lumumba was killed by the Belgians and the Americans.
So again, in terms of going beyond what you've been told, I don't think anybody's been told anything about the Congo. I certainly didn't know what was going on the last 2 weeks or so. So what do you want people to know about what's going on there now and what they can do? What would you like people to do?
There's a lot to do, but first of all, we have to show just solidarity with the Congolese people. Look at the revolution in Egypt, in Tunisia. How did that happen? It's plain and simple. It's through social media. Go on social media and talk about this. People will be curious enough as they keep seeing the same thing popping up over and over again.
To spread the word. Tell the story. Tell the story.
People will start paying attention. Right now, the hashtag that we're using on Facebook is Telema. It's hashtag T-E-L-E-M-A.
T-E, hashtag T-E-L-E-M-A. What does that mean?
Telema, it means stand up.
Stand up, okay.
It means stand up, pretty much. Stand up.
Is it stand up to the Kabila regime? Stand up to disenfranchisement?
Stand up to evil. People talk about the Holocaust. If we had known it was going on, we were going to do something. But right now, it's happening. And remember that these are people. These are human beings. It's not just a Congolese issue. It's a human issue, because these are human beings. These are lives that are being destroyed. I remember a few years ago, they talked about Kony, Joseph Kony, the whole Kony movement. The whole country was mobilized. Oh, children soldier. But it's happening in the Congo, and it's happening. It's not a Congolese thing. It's not an African thing. This is a humanity thing. If you want to ignore that now, saying that I'm not going to do this, it doesn't involve me, it doesn't have anything to do with me. You know, nobody believed that 9/11 could have happened. And when 9/11 happened, we all stood up with this country. I stood up with my American friends, with my American families, with all my American people. I had a flag on my car supporting the American people because of what happened in the US. I know that I've gotten a lot of my friends involved in this movement. I have Caucasian friends, I have Hispanic friends I've had some of them even sign this petition going to the White House, but we've signed 100 of those since 1999, mm-hmm. waiting for the government of the US to do something, but nothing has been done. I've called the White House myself. I've called the White House, I've spoken to someone there. I said, get this message to the president. My people are dying. Get a message to Secretary Rice. Get a message to Colin Powell. Get a message to what's her name, Hillary Clinton. Get a message to John Kerry. I've called the White House. I said, please, do something for my people. Please, do something. It's not a black thing or white thing. It's not an African thing or a Congolese thing, but it's a humanity thing. Yeah. For the sake of humanity, the 12 million are 12 million people. The women being raped right now, the children being raped are human beings. The people being displaced from their homes, they are humans. They're just like you and I. again, just reach out to us, that we just need your support in this, because Kabila does not care. He's a puppet. He's been used. He's a puppet. He's been used. That's all. He's a puppet. We don't want him in the Congo. We don't want Kabila in the Congo. But again, beyond Kabila, it's the whole country. It's the whole continent. It's the whole people. We need change. We need to educate ourselves, and we're reaching out to our friends, those who care, to stand up with us. Like you said, we got a hashtag, tell them how to stand up with us, to get the message across. Get it to those leaders, and if those leaders get the message, they will react.
And also, if you want to learn some real information from the Congolese people who are coming from the ground, I mean, you can find Friends of the Congo, which is the name, Friends of the Congo.
Is it a Facebook page? Or just,
yes,
they have a Facebook page. They just Google Friends of the Congo.
Friends of the Congo. They have a Facebook page, they're on Twitter, they're updating us constantly.
So it's the people on the ground giving you
giving the information on WhatsApp, yes.
So Friends of the Congo, reach out for that, search that, and I'll be paying more attention to it. There's a phrase that I wanna end with. And I'm going to try my best French accent. Starting in 2015, we're going to go from Le Mal Congo, the history of repression, the Sese Seko, Kabila lineage, to, you say Le Bien?
Le Bien.
Le Bien Congo.
Le Bien Congolais.
Le Bien Congolais.
Le Bien Congolais,
yeah.
Two brothers who I think are active in trying to make that Le Bien Congolais dream a reality. And I thank you guys. Appreciate you guys coming here. So we got Peter and
Yedidia.
And hopefully it looks like we got a lot to talk about. We're gonna probably do this again sometime in 2015. So thank you guys, very soon. Again, check out the Friends of Congo. Google
the Friends of Congo
to find out more information about what you can do, and I mean, spread the word. There are atrocities going on all over the world, but this is one that should not be forgotten. And Ubuntu Radio is out.
L'histoire glorieuse de notre lutte pour la liberté.